Welcome to the Deep Dive, your shortcut to being well-informed. Today we're diving into something that sits, well, right at the intersection of international trade, environmental protection, and maybe even that old car sitting in your driveway. We're talking about the complex world of rules around shipping waste across borders.
Exactly. And our guide for this deep dive is a presentation from the Chief Inspectorate of Environmental Protection. It gives a really clear view on the regulations for what's called transboundary waste movement, specifically focusing on vehicles and their parts.
Okay, so our mission today is to unpack all these rules for you. We want to understand the different layers and, crucially, figure out the specific criteria. Like, when does a car or a car part actually count as waste when it crosses a border?
And it's important because getting that classification wrong, that has pretty significant legal and environmental consequences.
You bet. And the rules can get incredibly specific, as we'll see.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's do it. So when you look at these rules for shipping waste, it's definitely not just one rule book. It's more like a system with multiple layers. It actually starts at the global level.
Global, you mean like a world treaty or something?
Precisely. It kicks off with the Basel Convention. This is an ONZ convention ratified by, I think, 191 states now. Huge coverage. Its main job is supervising how hazardous wastes move internationally, but it really sets the baseline principles for all waste movement across borders.
Okay.
And a key feature is its classification system, the green and amber lists for waste. Plus, it lays down a really major rule, a ban on exporting hazardous waste outside of the EU, OECD countries, and Liechtenstein. That's a big one.
Wow. Okay. So that's the highest level, setting major boundaries. How does that filter down, say, within Europe? What's the next layer?
Right. That brings us to the EU level. Here we have regulation, EC, No. 13/2006, on shipments of waste. This one is absolutely critical because it's a regulation, not a directive, meaning it applies directly as law in all EU member states. No waiting for countries to write their own laws to match it.
Okay, so it's immediate.
Yeah.
And what does this EU regulation cover that Basel doesn't get into quite as much?
Oh, it gets right into the nitty-gritty. It specifies exactly how waste is classified for shipping within the EU framework. It details the procedures you have to follow. And these procedures, well, they change depending on the type of waste and where it's headed.
Like within the EU versus outside?
Exactly. Within the EU to an OECD or EFAT country or somewhere else entirely. It lists all the required documents, even specific forms, and it includes detailed steps for what happens if a shipment is, you know, found to be illegal.
And speaking of these EU rules, our source actually points out this specific regulation, 113/2006. It's on its way out.
That's right. Yeah. Good point. It's being replaced by a new one, Regulation EU 22-4-57.
When does that kick in?
May 21, 2026. So yeah, the landscape is definitely evolving right now.
Good to know. Always changing.
It is. And then below the EU layer, you've got national laws. The source uses Poland as its main example. It talks about their Act of 29.06.207 on international waste shipment.
So this Polish law works alongside the EU one.
Exactly. It doesn't replace the EU regulation. It supplements it. It kind of weaves it into Poland's own administrative legal system. And it names the Chief Inspectorate of Environmental Protection, GIO, as the key authority in Poland for all this transboundary waste stuff.
Okay, so GIO is the agency on the ground then. They're the ones issuing permits for these shipments, handling the approvals.
Precisely. And the Polish law also spells out the specific national procedures, like how to order the return of waste that's been moved illegally. It also defines the administrative penalties if you break the rules.
Yeah, at least, right.
And importantly, Poland has added its own specific import bans. They prohibit bringing in waste that's meant for disposal, specifically processes D1 to D15, and they ban importing mixed municipal waste too.
Unless
it's been selectively collected and is definitely going for recycling. There's an exception there.
Got it. Okay, so global EU national layers. That's the framework. How does someone actually, you know, navigate shipping something under these rules? What are the actual steps?
Well, the source highlights two main procedural paths you might take for transboundary waste movement. Which one you follow really depends on the kind of waste and where it's going.
Okay, what are the two paths?
So first, there's the simpler one. It's called the General Information Obligation. You often hear it referred to by its document, the Annex Fiscal Document, or sometimes just the Informing Procedure or Article 18 Procedure.
Informing Procedure. Sounds straightforward.
It's basically about informing the authorities using a specific form, like less complex.
And the second path?
That's the procedure of prior written notification and consent. This is the the more involved one, the notification procedure. Like the name says, you have to formally notify the authorities way ahead of time and get explicit written permission before that shipment can legally move.
All right, that makes sense. Simple informing versus complex notification and consent. So the big question, how do you know which one you need? When does a shipment trigger that more complex notification process?
That's absolutely key. Based on the source material, the notification procedure is required for certain types of waste or specific situations. First up, any hazardous waste. That's waste marked with an asterisk in the waste catalog, or if it's on that amber list we mentioned.
And that asterisk relates to imports into the EU or OECD, right? You mentioned that earlier.
Good memory. Yes. The source notes, that's particularly relevant for imports into the EU and OECD because, remember, exporting hazardous waste out of the OECD, generally banned by Basel anyway.
Right, right. Okay, so hazardous waste needs notification. What else?
Also, any waste that's destined for disposal processes, if it's going to be disposed of, notification is needed. Plus, any unclassified waste or mixtures of waste that aren't specifically listed in Annex ASEA of the EU regulation, those automatically need notification.
Unclassified or mystery mixtures, got it.
And one more. Even green list waste or waste from Annex 30A needs notification if it's being exported outside the OECD. But only if another regulation, Regulation 1411-8-2007, specifically requires it because of the destination country's rules. So it depends on where it's going outside the OECD.
Okay, that adds another layer of complexity there.
It does. And for this notification procedure, you use a very specific form. It's from Annex IA of Regulation 1013-2006. This document gets a unique ID number from the authority, like PL001213 or DE 135000-01213, showing the countries involved. And the source points out fields 19 to 21 on that form. They're specifically for the authorities to use when processing the notification.
Right, so getting the paperwork spot on and knowing the right procedure is absolutely vital. And this whole system, it must get particularly tricky, as the source really digs into, when you're dealing with something like a car or car parts. I mean, one of the biggest headaches for inspectors must be figuring out, when does a car stop being just a car and become waste that falls under all these rules?
That is the absolute core challenge the source focuses on, especially for vehicles. It all hinges on the legal definition of waste. The Polish Waste Act, for example, defines waste as any substance or object the holder discards, intends to discard, or is legally obliged to discard.
Seems simple, but applying it.
Exactly. Applying that to a used car or a pallet of parts is where it gets tough. So to make that call, inspectors and authorities lean heavily on guidance documents. These include GEO's own methodological guidelines and also the EU correspondence guidelines. The source specifically flags Guideline No. 9 as really important because it deals precisely with vehicles.
Guideline No. 9. Okay, so what does it say? How do they classify a whole vehicle as waste?
They look at two main areas, its legal status and its technical condition. Legally, the source gives examples like, if there's a document preventing its original use, maybe it came through a waste collection system, or its explicitly stated purpose is dismantling for parts.
Or maybe it's been deregistered.
Yes, if it's been withdrawn from circulation without plans to re-register, or simply if there's no proof of current ownership. Any of those can point towards it being waste.
Okay, that's legal side. What about the technical condition?
Technically, a vehicle is usually seen as waste if it's damaged so badly it can't be fixed with just minor repairs, or if it has significant damage to essential parts, structure, engine, drivetrain, maybe from a bad accident, or if it's been, like, cut in half or burned.
Okay, minor repairs seems like a really crucial term there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it gets super interesting. What is minor damage? Damage that doesn't automatically make it waste. The source actually lists examples based on those EU guidelines.
Yes, and it's a really important distinction for inspectors and shippers. According to those EU guidelines, things typically not considered bad enough on their own to classify a whole vehicle as waste include.
Well, like a cracked windshield.
Exactly. A cracked windshield, broken headlights or taillights, maybe the hood's missing so the engine's exposed, or doors that don't shut right or are off the hinges but still attached to the frame.
Things that seem fixable.
Right. Needing new brake pads, a dead or missing battery, tires worn completely bald, or damage only to a non-essential part. These are generally viewed as repairable issues on a vehicle that's otherwise okay or intended for reuse.
Okay. And what about getting an expert opinion, like an automotive expert?
The source does mention that. An expert can definitely assess the technical condition, estimate the vehicle's value, figure out repair costs. That's useful information.
But,
and the source is very clear on this, citing a specific court judgment. An expert's opinion, however helpful, doesn't replace the environmental authority's legal power. The authority makes the final call on whether something meets the legal definition of waste under the regulations.
That makes sense. The authority applies the law. The expert provides technical input.
Oh.
Okay, so that's whole vehicles.
Yeah.
What about just the parts? When does a shipment of, say, engines or doors become regulated waste?
Similar detailed criteria apply to parts, but there are extra factors that come into play, especially how the parts are handled and transported. That becomes really, really important.
How so?
Well, based on the source, several things determine if car parts are waste when shipped across borders. First, their condition, naturally. Parts are likely waste if they're, say, heavily corroded, incomplete, still dirty, or contaminated with oil or fuel. Or if they show significant wear, can't be used directly in another car without major work, or are so damaged they basically need processing or recovery first.
So they need to be pretty much ready for reuse.
Ideally, yes. If not, they lean towards being waste. And here's a really big point, backed up by court judgments mentioned in the source. The method of loading, how they're packed, that's a huge indicator.
Method of loading, you mean just throw in a container?
Pretty much. If parts are just packed, unsorted, loose, piled up, maybe mixed with different kinds of parts or even other materials, that strongly suggests they're waste. The court ruling cited basically said this kind of packing implies the parts have no real usable value, haven't been prepped for reuse, and are therefore waste.
Wow, okay. So it's not just the part itself, but how you treat it during shipping. Carefully packed versus just dumped in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And closely related is how parts are secured for transport. If valuable parts meant for reuse, like engines or gearboxes, aren't properly packed and secured, you know, maybe not in a crate, not strapped to a pallet, no protection underneath like foil or sawdust to stop leaks or damage, then they can also be considered waste, even if the part itself seems okay. Proper packaging signals intent for reuse.
Okay, packaging is key. What else?
The sales documents and the price matter, too. If the paperwork description doesn't really match what's actually being shipped, or if the price seems off.
How do you mean off?
Like if it's priced by weight, like bulk scrap, rather than reflecting the market value of usable spare parts, that's a red flag suggesting it's waste.
Price close to scrap value.
Got it. And then there's a really critical category, parts that are just flat out prohibited from being reused.
Yeah.
The source points to specific Polish regulations here. These are parts whose reuse could endanger road safety or harm the environment. Think airbags, certain brake components maybe.
Things you wouldn't want failing.
Absolutely. By law, these cannot be put back into a vehicle for their original purpose. They must be treated as waste, no matter their condition or how they're packed. The source even notes they might get classified under a hazardous waste code, 160121, if they contain hazardous bits.
Right. So some parts are always waste.
Yes. And finally, parts that have been cut from a vehicle body, like halves or quarters of a car frame or assemblies that have been cut through, those are always considered waste. You can't just bolt a car half onto another car. They need major processing first.
So cutting up the body definitely makes it waste. No ambiguity there.
Pretty much. And the source, citing a very recent court ruling from just July 2024, really hammers home that inspectors look at all these factors together. During a roadside check or border control, each case is assessed individually based on the combination of these criteria. It's not just one thing.
It's the whole picture.
Exactly, the whole picture. And just to bring this down to earth a bit, the source includes some real-world data from Poland about end-of-life vehicles. Under Polish law, if a vehicle that wasn't registered in Poland gets dismantled in Poland, the dismantling facility has to send a certificate confirming this to GO within 7 days.
Ah, okay. So this tracks foreign cars being scrapped in Poland. Does the data show much activity?
It does, and it shows an increase. Looking at the number of these certificates GEOSH received, there were 973 in 2022, then 973 in 2023, jumping to 1707 in 2024.
Wow, quite a jump.
Yeah, and already 424 just in the first quarter of 2025 reported. So it points to a growing number of these non-Polish registered vehicles being processed as end of life within Poland.
Interesting trend.
It gives a tangible sense of the scale, doesn't it? The sources graphs also show like where these vehicles came from originally and which regions in Poland they went to for dismantling. It paints a clearer picture of these flows.
So after all that, layers of rules, specific criteria, court cases, What does this all boil down to for you listening, whether you're in the auto trade, logistics, environmental law, or just curious about old cars?
Well, I think it means that shipping anything that might be waste across borders, especially vehicles or parts, requires really careful attention to a complex web of rules. You've got global principles, detailed EU regulations, and specific national laws all interacting. And the line between a valuable, reusable item and something legally defined as waste, it isn't always intuitive.
Not at all.
It comes down to a very specific checklist. Condition, history, intent, paperwork, and, critically, how things are packed and secured.
It's pretty striking how fine those lines can be and how many factors an inspector has to weigh up right there on the spot.
It really is, and it highlights the challenge of enforcement. So, maybe a final thought for you to consider, drawing from everything we've discussed. Given these very specific criteria, from, you know, cracked windshields not being enough to bulk packing being a major red flag and the fact that every case is assessed individually, how challenging do you think it is to ensure these rules are applied consistently across all borders all the time? And what are the real-world consequences, legally and environmentally, when someone gets that classification wrong?
Definitely something to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Keep exploring.